Should architecture challenge conventional ideas of form and function? This is what we discuss today with Jacob van Rijs, who is one of the founders of the Dutch architecture practice MVRDV.
Design Perspectives, the podcast of the German Design Council. Today with host Martin Paoli.
Welcome to a new episode of Design Perspectives, the podcast of the German Design Council. My name is Martin Paoli. Jacob van Rijs is one of the founding partners of MVRDV and an influential figure in the contemporary architecture, known for his expertise in urban planning and innovative architectural solutions. He's recognized for his attention to detail, blending bold, forward-thinking concepts with practical and user-centric designs. As both a practicing architect and a professor, Jacob is deeply committed to pushing the boundaries of urbanism while advocating for sustainable and future-oriented approaches in architecture. Welcome, Jacob.
Right. Thank you, Martin. Nice to hear such an introduction.
Yeah, that was a nice introduction. No? So, Jacob, your career probably spans decades of innovation and practicing. How has your approach to architecture evolved over the years, and particularly in response to growing global challenges like climate change and urban density?
Yes, and yeah, this is a very nice question, but it's also difficult to have an immediate answer. I think it's not one direct answer. I think some things did not change, in that you have every time excitement when new projects come up or when buildings breaking ground, or you go to see a building that's being used and these kind of things. So that feeling is still the same. But of course, what did change is the whole, let's say, how you collaborate with all kind of people. And that when we started, we were really small, so to say. And now it's a larger firm, so my daily work has changed. But the motivation, I think, is more or less still the same.
That's interesting. I mean, what did not change? Because you say something's changed, like the people and the size of the practice, of course. But what is constant over the past?
Well, the fact of making designs and architectural projects and interventions that can be so rewarding. And so every time new things come up, or things make take a certain direction, then this feels really good that there's something happening. And of course, there's also disappointments when things drop and you get a little bit thicker skin for that, so to say. So it doesn't hurt that much. But yeah, I think that thrill, in a way, of new designs and things that come together, I think is still the same. Yeah.
And what makes a project, or also the day-to-day work,
well, that can be design rewarding? Meetings and where we decide on certain direction, or that we have a solution, then everything's like, oh yeah, this is great. That's rewarding. And sometimes, of course, it's a lot of, let's say, sometimes the projects can take a long time. Eh? So that means to keep this sort of intention and the spirit alive is important.
Yeah.
And it doesn't become like, okay, here we go again. That happens, of course. But
so you still have the feeling when you're kind of entering the practice or the office that there's fresh energy and there's, I mean, there will be routine, I guess, but it still gives you energy. That's what I hear. That's
but the combination of, let's say, you mentioned it, I am teaching as well here in Berlin. So that combination also makes it more exciting, I think.
And if we look at the context, like compared to when you started with the practice and now, how have the kind of the themes and the kind of the pressure that we all seem to feel, how is that influencing your approach to architecture, but also the maybe even the design language, the choice of materials or whatnot these days?
Yeah, of course, we lost our naivety a bit, but we try to keep that as well. So there's certain, don't go for the obvious immediately or say, oh, that's not possible. So that you become like, okay, I'm so experienced, I know exactly what does work and what does not work. That's a trap you have to avoid.
The comfort zone, basically.
Okay. But still, of course, you have much more experience. So you know, okay, this is how we can solve it, or this is what I like more than than that. So a certain taste, your taste has developed, and you know more or less, okay, this, I don't have to think about this topic because I know how to solve this and focus on something else.
Yeah, interesting. So you have to somehow constantly leave the comfort zone again to kind of develop fresh approach.
Yeah. Ideally, yes. It's also what we somehow, that people somehow expect that from us, also that are working from us, that there is this sort of curiosity aspect. That each project should be different, more or less, could be different, but we have a very wide approach and almost like we don't have a sort of fixed style, so to say. We have maybe an attitude that can be recognized, but the output can be very diverse. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would say that part of the attitude is that boldness to some extent. And kind of what else would you say is part of the DNA?
Yeah, maybe boldness. Yeah, we spoke about braveness lately. That I think, yeah, that you have to dare and try to say, okay, what are we trying to do, achieve here? And how can we do this? And sometimes you have to exaggerate as well a little bit to make sure that something is landing in a slightly better position that you aim for.
Yeah. Can you give us an example where kind of, or maybe a recent example or whatever you want to choose, where you dared a lot?
Werbung. Werde Teil der internationalen Architekturwelt. Die Iconic Awards 2025 sind die Auszeichnung für Architektur, Interior Design und innovative Produkte. Nutze deine Chance auf mehr Sichtbarkeit und mach mit auf iconic-awards.com. Werbung Ende.
Dear, yeah, it's always difficult to give one example, but that I think each project has certain elements, but I think I cannot find one at the moment that I say, okay, this is, yeah, just because there's too many things.
Yeah.
But I don't have something immediately there. Maybe it comes later. Yeah, yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah.
And but still, because I find that very interesting, and it to some extent that emerges also throughout or across podcasts, that architecture has a lot to do with having the courage to do something different or to dare something. And that can be, you can dare almost everything. The choice of the material, a certain function or a certain aesthetics. Is it that portfolio?
Yeah, you have to combine this kind of daringness with a sort of, the aspect of how to do it, how to make sure it works, and these kind of things. So that's always an interesting balance. As you are from an office that can assist sometimes in this kind of discussions to make to prove that it works, and to the daringness is not just somehow skyhooks, as you call them sometimes. And I like that word that came from discussions with structural advisors. Oh, how's that work? Oh, it's, skyhooks.
Yeah. The Siemens Lufthansa. Yeah. Interesting, because especially in the context of an industry or a sector that is very risk averse, high cost pressure, high pressure on time, kind of daring something can also put you in a potentially difficult position. But apparently it has turned out to be a good strategy, and it was robust enough over the past couple of years.
True. Yeah, you have sometimes, but the daring is not always in it should be crazy or so. It can also be just a different way of looking at things. And sometimes people come to you because of the fact that they wanted something else, that they don't know exactly what they want. Then this discussion is can be interesting. And then the dialogue of finding the right solution is can be really rewarding. And then sometimes you have to put a lot of options on the table to find the right tone.
Has that changed, like in an era of digital and generative design, like coming up with kind of hundreds of options as to how you lay out something? Or is that, how would you describe that? Has it become, was it a relief or is it adding complexity now?
That depends per project. Indeed, you have sometimes a situation where there's an endless reiteration of another one, another one, another one. And then after a while, you sort of can lose it. Then you get indeed engulfed in options. And that's sometimes, it's interesting to find, maybe you need sometimes help from others to say, hey, wait a minute, what are we going for? And
because it's not only about the endless options, I guess it's also about taking design decisions step by step.
But it's very easy to make variants, so to say, and then to choose the right one, and that or can be can be a tricky process, or that can also be a game. Like, okay, if you want something, you could use a certain option to get to what's not what you want, to show it what you, and then in the end you get something else.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is more in the dynamic of a design and strategy in an early stage.
Yeah. So, speaking about design and strategy, and adding a bit of kind of the sustainability angle and the climate change angle, your projects often seem to incorporate green spaces or sustainable materials. How does the firm, and also you individually, integrate sustainability thinking into your designs without compromising other aspects of a design?
Yeah, first of all, the word sustainability is very complicated, and that's like maybe you have to focus on certain aspects, and you can use this ESG goals to help to focus on certain topics. So, which is the topic, the sustainable topic we find important? Is it longevity? Is it greenness, or is it CO2 reduction,
yeah,
or is it operational carbon reduction? So you can say, okay, and then which can be the most successful strategy? So this is something which is, that I noticed it's very important. Otherwise, you can lose it again in that. I mean, you have too many focus points, and in the end, you might lose them all, or you get the wrong one. So yeah, what we try to do in the beginning of a project nowadays is also really looking at carbon strategies, which is then to try to monitor that during the design. And there we have some people in the office that have that role, that help to analyze this, and to even though it's still difficult for us as more designed to stick to that, huh? So that means, but that's, I think the awareness of it is important, but it can also lead to a sort of that everything becomes the same, so that should also be avoided, so that okay, this is the right solution and everybody does the same thing. Yeah, but so that of course is much more on the table from the beginning, and not something at the end of the design document. Oh yeah, we do something about sustainability. Try to find it, that it's grounded in, and it can also be in the urban design. And we also are very much focused on, let's say, optimization of densities. That was an early topic, and this can have sort of side effects that have then a reduction of movement or infrastructure. So yeah, that can be it all works together in that respect. And then trying to understand that and trying to explain that, what is now really the goal, that's more relevant these days.
Yeah, exactly, because I mean there could be a risk that we are reducing every architectural discussion only to carbon,
mm-hmm,
and try to potentially reduce the most beautiful and functional design into a metric, which mm-hmm is CO2 equivalence. Yeah, that could be that could be difficult. But sometimes people want to reduce complexity. Also, we heard that also in other podcasts, that competition entries require that, and in some cases, decisions are being taken based on carbon. And while I also personally kind of appreciate that there's a very clear focus on carbon, on whole life carbon, it needs to be balanced. And I think this is what you just described. But have you had a situation also in the office when you were kind of sitting around with maybe clients or engineers or all the stakeholders when carbon was a key decision factor?
Not that many times, I have to say. To be honest, it's more sometimes that sometimes regulations are the discussions, how to make sure this is within a certain regulation, but that can help to kind of to orientate and say, okay, this is good, this is less good, and this is not good at all. It helps to maybe to optimize this kind of sea of options again. Say, okay, maybe this is not the way to go because of this. It can be very superficial sometimes, and sometimes it's really important that you have to prove that that the complete structure has a certain amount of energy and embodied carbon in it. And that depends as well very much per country where you work.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is also what
in Per City.
London is a special context. Mm-hmm. Denmark as well, very, very kind of strict targets. Mm-hmm. Is there a project example that you have in mind where you feel that the the whole life carbon aspect, or the like a very clear focus on bringing that down has become very visible or influenced.
Well, we recently did a competition in Amsterdam for a housing tower together with an office ally collaboration. So in this case, we worked together with Space Encounters, an office from Amsterdam. We decided, let's have a good time, let's do a competition together.
Yeah.
And that's energy, yeah, turned into a positive thing. We won the competition. Now it's doing it, and now it's making it work. And there's a lot of quite strict regulations about energy and performance of the building, and that's quite a puzzle and a challenge. But that's also exciting. I mean, you have to make sure that it's almost basically net zero, basically.
Yeah.
And that's requires a lot of extra work and to make that land and make it all feasible. Yeah.
But it's interesting that you directly say it's exciting, because I mean, I also feel that yes, there is regulation and there are kind of more onerous requirements which have to be met, but at the same time there's still the kind of the creativity and the element of finding the right solution in that particular context, which seems to be an inherent part of architecture and the day-to-day practice. I think what I want to say is this is nothing that is unsolvable. No, it's
true. It requires, but you see that also there's all kind of new materials come on the market. That, for instance, you have all kind of integration of solar PV functions and materials that they don't look like PV panels anymore.
Yeah,
of course. Structural things like building in wood or hybrid combinations. I think this is all. Yeah, you have to really stay alert on what's possible, and that makes it again, interesting to see. Okay, what can we learn? What can we combine? And it's not just a simple, typical steel concrete stuff and whatever, bloody. But it's about how you mix it up and how to it's not forbidden. Of course, it's always a combination of things. Yeah.
And is that an element that you would say, maybe quickly going back to the initial question, would you say that, I don't know, 25 years ago, concrete steel would have been the natural choice, and now there's a broader portfolio of materials, of solutions?
Yeah, that's definitely true. But in the end, it's always about what are we trying to say? What are we aiming for? Let's say the idea behind a design and a project is still the driving force. And then combining that with the challenges of the day, that has changed. And the idea itself is not always winning every time, but you have to find a balance there. So that's...
Yeah. And just quick shift towards the university. You're teaching. What do you think, to what extent are your students, how rapidly they adapted to that changing context now with much more pressure on climate and resource scarcity? Is that something that is kind of clear in their...
Very much aware, of course, especially when you see here in Berlin at university.
Yeah.
But I always I also try to be optimistic here. Yeah? Like, if you don't get too depressed, and I think let's see what's possible instead of what's not possible.
Yeah. That's the right attitude.
Yeah, I think, and before you know, otherwise everything starts to look the same, and that's what you really have to avoid. And it's like, okay, this is not, it's about innovation, it's about trying and inventing new solutions.
Yeah.
So therefore, you keep them alert, and but also it's in the debate, of course, maybe more than, and a different way than in the office. I think the new generation is very aware of that, and but of course they have to avoid the typical solutions that are. Yeah, maybe not always the best ones. So, there's more possible than you think.
Yes.
Sometimes it's a material that maybe not doesn't sound very sustainable, could be sustainable if you look at it from a different perspective.
Yeah, it's absolutely. It's there's no simple answer. No, yeah. It remains sufficiently complex.
Yeah.
However, the context and the boundaries that we have, they are almost changing the framework for innovation. No, you have kind of different solutions out there, different pressure. But what I hear from the conversation is this is not necessarily limiting the architecture world. It's stimulating. Yeah.
Now you feel that especially here in Germany, this whole discussion of demolition, of course, or should we build at all something new? So sometimes why just stop building? So that kind of creates a different perspective.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of issues of transformations, of course, keeping a building instead of demolishing it. trying to modify it, trying to have fun with it, so to say, and do something exciting with an existing building. This is something that's very much on the menu there.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So you mentioned density earlier. Looking at how cities develop, how the themes around housing shortage, rising populations develop, I know that's different context, mm-hmm. like from country to country, and in some cases even city by city. The city of density, I guess, also especially in the Netherlands, has always been an inherent part of the discussion. How do you think architecture more broadly and more specifically, if your practice have responded to that social housing crisis, for instance, still focused on quality of life, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth?
Yeah, what I noticed, there's many issues that you mentioned, but I think, coming from an averagely densely populated country, it doesn't have huge, super dense cities. There's a lot of in-betweenness. That maybe made us more aware of the danger of just spreading everything out and the potential of kind of keeping things together. You see a lot there in mixed use. I think that is not a monofunctional neighborhood, but more make sure that there's excitement in combinations of activities, concentration of certain kind of build mass. It makes cities more interesting, reduces traffic. But still, of course, as an architect, you cannot solve all this, but you can show the potential of a certain direction, and we have discussions of where to build, go into the Grüne Wiese, in the green meadows, or trying to optimize existing urban context, which is usually more complicated, but in the end pays off in the long run, keeps on coming back, and that is the easy way, is have a green field and start with a nice mostly housing new neighborhood, or try to optimize existing neighborhood, which I think is more rewarding.
So you were laughing a bit when you said, hey, there's that principle of not build new. I mean, do we need new buildings?
Well, it's a good question to start first. Maybe we have to need a manual. First question, do we need to build? And they say, And then if the question is, maybe we could do something different, why not? It's good to have that question always on the table and have an answer to that. Why not? And why do we?
And what I get from your response is that there will very likely always be a context and project specific question. No? There is, again, mm-hmm. no one fits all.
It's not that we try to say let's avoid any activity. No, you need to. There's a lot of work in transformation and turning old buildings into better ones.
Yeah,
upgrading them in an interesting way. That can be. Yeah, it's much more. Much more relevant than when we started from the sustainability point of view.
Yeah,
and there's many combinations of old and new or complete transformation projects that we are working on. Because we built so much in the last 50 years that we have to clean up the mess.
There are a couple of prominent examples in Amsterdam, of course, and also beyond. But is there one project where you believe kind of that embodies that aspect of kind of dealing clearly with the existing built environment, but adding something to it?
Yeah, maybe it's nice to explain. We did a transformation of a high-rise building in China, in mm-hmm. Shenzhen. It's also nominated for best high-rise in Frankfurt coming month, I think. But because it's an interesting and relevant theme, what do we do with all the buildings that we built in the last 40 years? And high-rises, of course, are more. Yeah, you don't demolish them so easily. So in this case, it was a really unattractive, let's say, failed building, and the question was, you could demolish it, but you didn't have to do it. So we decided to go for maximum maintenance, so to say, a lot of modifications. And I during that project is for it's called for Women and Children's Center. For it's basically a family-oriented building with a family-friendly hotel and some offices, but there's a big play zone, it's a gathering space in the neighborhood. I noticed that the uglier the building is, the more room for design and the more room for change there is, which seems logical.
Yeah,
and that you can do things that you cannot really do with a new building. So we propose things that would be really difficult to do in a new design. People will start to question that, where you have, in combination with an existing building that doesn't look fantastic, To be modest, people accept more radical solutions.
Yeah, and what are examples for those radical solutions?
Well, it could be the use of color. It could be more maybe this boldness of doing something strange with an existing structure, making a certain material choice, a certain combination of materials. In this case, for this building, it was mostly the use of color. It's very bunt, as we say in Germany, bunt. Fabric has a lot of fabric. I'm just mixing up languages now. A lot of colorful buildings.
Yeah.
Anyway, this combination would have been difficult to explain in a context where you have everything, where everything would be possible, and it was much more. It felt much more logical when
it's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to ask whether you believe that kind of a Chinese context is better suited to deliver such a building, because all the compromises that you just described that might be related to how you access the building or the ceiling height or the kind of the building services, I mean, everything that you're day-to-day dealing with, I could imagine in a context like Germany, maybe even Netherlands or UK, this would immediately lead to the point that, hey, let's get rid of the building and let's do it from scratch again.
Indeed, it had to do with these kind of things because the ceiling height was too low. There was a bad situation with the air handling, so it needed a lot of upgrading there.
Yeah.
But by basically accepting that and finding basically creating a shaded facade, we could solve that topic. But that I think would happen here maybe as well. But here maybe there could be regulations that say, okay, you cannot keep it, and you have to.
It would have been my. That would have been the next question. Do you think such an example would have been possible here, and what would have been the?
Well, yes, I think when you have an existing building, there's also kind of maybe the regulations are looked at in a different way because you can. But when it was built, there were different starting points, so it's sometimes impossible to meet current regulations because of the.
But still, you have a building structure that embodies a lot of carbon that you retained, obviously. You found a new solution, so there potentially you saved a lot of money, a lot of new resources. There's a new purpose for the building. Everyone seems to be happy, and you're even getting a prize. So you're ticking a lot of boxes, and the question is to what extent that must be also a blueprint for...
I think it's an eye-opener for people that's... needs the question of let's get rid of it. It's maybe not the first question, or maybe the first answer is, hey, what can we do with it?
Exactly. Yeah.
And then by showing this way of working, people can say, oh yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. That's it could lead to something really fun and exciting and beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely developments that we see also across Europe now. I mean, in markets like London, you need to submit a pre-demolition audit. Yeah. You need to really prove that the existing
really
building
good.
Structure cannot be kept, as opposed to just quickly getting rid of it because you would compromise the business case if you would keep it. So I think indeed that's interesting and that's promising. And I think these will be increasingly also the future discussions that the practice is going
to. These regulations are very important, and then people start, indeed, if you calculate it like carbon credits, or you get basically a certain amount of whatever reduction in cost or ground prices, if you are able to do that, then the solutions that are now maybe more expensive are then becoming much more feasible.
Yeah. Is the entire topic around, because I mean this, what you just described is obviously also an inherent principle of circularity, keeping materials at the highest value and keeping them in loops and kind of extending the life span, longevity. Is that something that you're dealing with more and more, like the topic of, hey, do we actually have materials, the steel, the concrete, the aluminium, the glass available, or do we shift our focus to reused components? Is that something?
Yeah, sometimes it's you start with to discuss these kind of things, but it's not always possible in the end.
Yeah.
That has to do with, let's say, guarantees and these kind of things. So that there's still a big step to take, and that everybody's super excited about a certain, hey, let's do this, and this thing, and we use it and turn it into this. A lot of hurdles sometimes, but when it works out, it's great. But it's,
But I think it also requires a bit of an attitude in your day-to-day practice? No, if the kind of one of the first questions in a design process is, hey, what type of existing resources do we actually have? And I think that really depends on the specific building type and asset class.
Yeah.
But I think this is something that we also increasingly see that London, for instance, is very mature when it comes to reusing steel beams. And to a large extent, that also determines how the design will potentially take shape.
If you have a certain amount of beams available, that means that's exciting, of course, to play with these sort of limitations. You have also certain architects that are really focusing on this into this reuse skills. So I think it's a sort of specialism that not everybody is able to handle it in such detailed way. So they become more or less advisors of other architects. I think
that's
already happening.
And then
you find indeed, hey, we have this and this and this building and it will be gone, or we have a certain amount of material X, or we have bricks of type A. And it's a new way of designing, of course.
It's that famous material,
but it also is difficult there. But in terms of planning, it really depends on the type of project. Sometimes it's just hard to integrate it, and maybe when smaller projects it's maybe easier, but it can be an issue of planning, and then things are ultimately not working out. But still, this could have an impact on how you perceive the design, how it comes together, so to say. Even then, if this in the end it doesn't really work as intended, you still have made certain awareness of it, I think.
I think your designs also often encourage social interaction, community building. I mean, how do you believe design and architecture can help fostering stronger, more resilient communities in that context of also all the challenges that you see in urban contexts?
Yeah, of course. As an architect, you're not you cannot solve everything. But I think it's important that you have this sort of that you design are embedded in the context that people that are using them, have a feeling with what's happening around it, so to say.
Yeah.
This placemaking aspect, I think, is important already sometimes in an early stage. And ultimately, it's also the talking to people and see how they tick and what drives them and what can we deliver and what can we design to make it work in the best way possible.
Yeah. And do you see that as you rightly say, architects cannot solve every problem, but is that part of your responsibility if you're building a building in a city that it kind of has that element of, hey, what is it actually, what impact is it having on the local community?
Yeah, of course you have in practical things. You can make an inviting building, or you can make a building that's more or less closed off. So these are sort of design issues that people are aware of. That a good street, a good facade, and people meet each other, people see each other. This is, I would say, almost no-brainers. But still
we see a lot of those. Exactly what you just described.
And on the other hand, knowing the people in the community that might work or use the building or live there, you cannot really influence that. So it means you, at a certain moment, it's out of your hands, and then the people take it and
that's true.
And then, of course, you can imagine this would work like this, and then it could all indeed, but it can also be completely different. So allowing for change and allowing for a different way of using it, I think that's super important.
Yeah. Because, I mean, during the design or competition phase, there are these renderings full of people and cafes, and then the reality looks or could look slightly different. But there are famous examples, obviously, in Rotterdam. But for an inviting, you mentioned like an inviting building.
For instance, in Rotterdam, we're doing new high rises, and there's a lot of awareness of Rotterdam is sort of the Frankfurt of the Netherlands. So there's the city with the most experience in high rise, and they noticed that on the ground floor, there's always a lot of things happening, technical spaces, delivery, and that had a really ultimately not always a good effect on the street life. So now they became super aware of this ground floor, how to make this inviting, how to basically hide the uninteresting stuff in a smart way, so that the plinth becomes more attractive and more there's more interaction possible. That sounds very, very easy and understandable, eh? Everybody. But making that work has an that has a big impact on how to make the solution works. That you have your delivery of the technical stuff works in this way, and the garbage guys pick up the trash cans, and so these kind of, and ultimately that all has to happen on the right way. But then thinking from the beginning, okay, we have to do it in a way that it looks for the people in passing by in the best attractive way possible, and that's why the solution is a bit maybe not the most practical for the garbage delivery, but somehow it works. And so this sounds extremely practical now, but this comes from a sort of improvement of an awareness of the impact of a building in a city, and basically intensifying city with more higher buildings. These puzzles become more and more complicated.
Yeah.
But
and again, I mean, this again goes back to finding the right balance. Yeah. No, they are not only practical, not only aesthetical, functional, or material-based elements. It all needs to come together into one coherent piece of architecture that still has its own identity. Yeah, I think that's the beauty about that practice. It's not necessarily off-topic, but I mean, we see a lot of technological innovations making some of us nervous, others not, starting from drones and 3D printing and all that. And that's creating a lot of fuzz, if you like. And sometimes I personally think it's distracting us from the kind of the real needs that architecture has to fulfill. But I don't want to answer the question. What's your view on the kind of on all that kind of those technological innovations? Have you 3D printed a house, for instance?
No, I didn't do that. But I know that they did a couple of them at the university in Eindhoven. They're really interested in that. But so it's good to make these tests, and they have different universities that have these living labs and sort of buildings where they really try out all kind of solutions. I think it's super important that people can really see that and test it in real life.
Yeah.
And I think this is the type of innovation and research that architects should be doing. And sometimes you can do that in a construction project where you say, okay, we want to have this and this and this, and you make all kind of mock-ups, and that's a topic. But then you were also mentioning production method, I think. So there are certain places there's a lack of people that can build. Yeah? So that means that there's a different way of constructing, more with prefabrication.
Yeah.
So this will all have an influence on the technology, how we put things together. Maybe indeed there's a factory that uses a lot of robots for elements and then put them together on the building site in a more smooth way. So these are all intriguing tendencies happening around it. And sometimes they're not relevant at the beginning of a project, but they sort of appear and during the next stages. But I think, definitely. I think this is the testing of it. It's always important, but it can be complicated in a real project. People are afraid of will not last. But we do need to try out stuff, and instead of otherwise we have always the same facade materials and the same things, and anything else will become, it's not possible, or it's too expensive, or it doesn't have a guarantee. So that's there we have to push for that.
I think that's a very clear clear answer and also attitude. I mean, innovation has always been part of architecture, also historically, always in a certain context, whether it was resource scarcity or technological advantage. We have, I don't know, flying through the space.
We used it for instance in the Netherlands, and you show it to somebody here in Germany, and the first question is, does it have a fire rating approval? But do you like it? It's nice. But that doesn't really matter. Now we could maybe try to get it.
And I think we'll see a lot of these innovations that you also mentioned at scale, given all the disadvantages, for instance, of on-site construction and the shift to more modularity and off-site. I think without losing quality, that's the point. But again, that seems to be also an emerging playing field for architects and designers. New agendas that are added constantly, and it's great to see that this is not something that is seen as it's scary, but it's something that you actually embrace.
We noticed that certain people are from the construction industry, they also, let's say, work with 3D drawings, programs, of course, but they look at it from a construction perspective. So they can, and then if you work together with them, you really start to optimize and learn how things work. And so that is almost like a seamless transition between the design and the execution.
Yeah. So as a leader in the industry, you're modest. How do you see the role of architects overall changing and respond to urban issues? Are there kind of, what is your responsibility as a leader, and maybe to some extent also what is MVRDV's responsibility and in kind of shaping future architecture? Complex question, sorry.
Yeah, totally. Well, responsibility, I think you could see that from how you could act in one specific project or on a larger scale. But of course, I think through your projects, you can make kind of visions and illustrations of a new way forward and solutions.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you can also make a more, let's say, we also make like books that almost like are like manuals and catalogs offering kind of solutions, this and this and this you could do.
Yeah.
And then it's more on a sort of schematic level, but it can also be very inspirational. And it also can also be for decision makers. Okay, why don't we, it can be for instance, we did one on the use of the roof. Yeah, so that had to optimize the use of roofs.
Yeah.
There's a big potential there. And that these books, they land on certain places. And people, let's,
interesting.
This is what I like. This is, we could do it like this. We can kind of put all kinds of things on. And then there's all kind of practical issues, but that comes then afterwards. So that's one part of the output of the office. And at the same time, you can illustrate that with projects this question you could do on the roof, like we did here with the Yellow Stair in Berlin. That's then an illustration of the idea that we also have in a more theoretical context in a publication.
So you somehow influence the debate with innovative topics, and then you go beyond that by really kind of showcasing things in the physical world, which usually creates visibility, interest, but also trust that this is actually nothing that just exists in theory, but in practice. Yeah, that's the
and it's also longer. These are longer themes, and so we have a series of these projects that are activating roofs. So this is and it also deals with optimizing space, with how do we mix activities, and how do we make cities more resilient? How do you reduce the heat effect? So there's a lot of related topics to this specific focus.
And the yellow building at Tempelhofer Feld. Did someone ask? Was it part of the design brief to
make it yellow? No,
that's not to have an accessible roof.
No, we actually, this is part of a project called Bufa, which is a former film studio area that's being now transformed into a more sustainable business area.
And
much more mixture of, let's say, building and landscape. And this building was already there. And we had our first meetings in this building for transformation of one of these studios. And everybody immediately walked to the windows looking to Tempelhofer Veld. The best view would be on top of the building, and the building didn't have a meeting room. So during this first project, we discussed the potential of the building we were in, and that was then the second project. By having this meeting room on top, making the roof accessible, this would be the killer view on Tempelhofer Veld. and by having this more public staircase, you have an independent access, and it's also the escapeway from the roof to the ground floor.
So it evolved, and now it's manifested in a very bold way.
In bold way, but it's also a typical example of a very ugly building that became something cool, and that shows the potential of boring buildings, I think. And somehow this is a recent theme that's on my mind.
That's again a very
transformation, boring, challenging, and exciting to transform a boring building into something cool and exciting.
But still, from a sustainability perspective,
also
again,
makes sense.
Make a lot of sense. Sure. So, looking ahead a bit now, what do you believe is the most critical challenge for architects in the next decades, and not only for kind of individual, but also kind of collectively and the entire community?
Jesus, I think this
is not going to be just
the whole
one.
I think it's totally with deals with the impact of the future and the climate, of course, and what type of impact it means for certain neighborhoods, certain cities, how you plan for that, how you prepare yourself, how to make things resilient. It's kind of buzzword, but in relation to a building, it can be how to make the building future-proof, how to make sure that things can change or in a certain way, or that it also becomes a good place where people like to go. It's not rocket science, but that is still But that, putting that all together, it's becoming more and more interesting. So it's also on the level of neighborhoods and landscapes, all this integration of these aspects.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying it's no rocket science, but on the other hand, it is a bit of black magic to make spaces and also buildings really work for people. No, I mean, if you look around at in Berlin areas like the main train station, like that entire district. I mean, to be honest, I don't want to hang around there a lot, so it does something with me. Yeah. So all I want to say is, it is more complex than just kind of.
Yeah, but you need a good guidance and good, let's say, supervising of. In this case, I haven't recently been there, but I know a little bit what you mean there, the area behind the station. And yeah, when it comes too much from Immobilienhambücher, it becomes like that. And then there's no strong force against. So let's say that for this, that somebody who's guiding and guarding the quality of the public spaces, yeah, then it could turn into something.
Yeah, which is boring, by the way, then also, I mean, in the mid to long run, impacting on the business case, which has been initially potentially the most important aspect, because if no one wants to live there or to work, play there.
And sometimes you have to give it a little bit of time. I think so, indeed, maybe it's not great in the beginning, and then people say, it's not really great.
Yeah.
We've got to do something about it. And then in second step,
there will be layers and layers.
It could improve, but it sometimes takes time.
Excellent. So, I mean, if I would, it's really difficult to summarize or that or somehow bring it together. But I liked a couple of aspects that you mentioned. The one around kind of you have to dare something. You have to have the courage as an architect to kind of to constantly push the boundaries. I think this is, if that becomes an inherent part of the design process, this can lead to.
If you are not doing it, who is doing it?
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. But I think I like really that attitude resonates a lot with me. And still you have to find the right balance, as you say. So it's not like doubling down on one aspect just because it's modern at the moment, or it's always around kind of finding a very balanced approach that works for many, of incorporating carbon, new material, social aspects, but still delivering a functional and also aesthetically pleasing design that works for humans. I think this is what I also took out, and I also really appreciated your take on kind of innovation. Yeah, it's architecture and design is always about innovation and really embracing new technologies, new materials, and kind of have that attitude to turn that into something that is not only working theoretically but also in practice.
Yeah.
And this seems to be the role of architects.
It's difficult
and
to testing, because suddenly you have, and then it's a real building, and then it's like people are feeling treated as guinea pigs. Can we try something out if it works?
Yeah.
And then we had one experience in one of our first buildings where we had, it was the VPRO building, it's an office building for a television company, a radio company. And it was spatially quite complicated. And at that moment, it was very hard to predict how the acoustics would work for the spaces, because the spaces were not easy to model. Maybe they could do it right now, but in the 90s, it was not possible. And there was a certain amount of budget for acoustics. The danger would be that everything would be sprayed with a kind of acoustical plaster. That would be more or less the budget. But that was, could we try, because then we might put plaster on places where we don't need it. Eh? So maybe we need a bit of extra absorption here and a bit of less there, but they couldn't really tell that. And then we said, okay, let's just see how it works. And then we have that money in the pocket, and then we do the acoustic later. And that was a good story, but in the end, that was like hell broke loose because the acoustics were bad. And then everybody said, but that was, we know that, but that's, we're going to solve it.
Yeah.
And now it's solved, but it took a while, and now we have indeed really fascinating solutions to absorb the sound where it's needed. But the decision to accept the fact that it's not good in the beginning led to the solution, which is now kind of perfectly tailored.
Yeah.
Some people had some issues because they were sitting in a space that was acoustically bad, but they sort of suffered for a good cause, because now we have a very nice solution.
Yeah,
yeah. But this is something that if I offer this now, people say no, it's not we're not going to do this again. Yeah.
But it's a good story also to end the conversation, which I really really appreciate it. Jakob, thanks a lot for your openness and also flexibility to respond to all the themes and the questions. So thanks a lot.
Thanks, Martin.
So we would be absolutely delighted if you would subscribe to Design Perspectives. If you have any questions or comments or criticism, please send an email to podcast@gdc.de.
The Design Perspectives podcast is a production of the German Design Council.